I had the pleasure of meeting Judge Vinson, but when he was a county representative. And I never saw a gentleman for what he wasn't dressed up. Very immaculate. And the time that I met him, I was a youth. I was at a reunion at Armco Park out of Ashland. He really stood out in the crowd because he was in a dark striped suit, black shoes, highly polished, very immaculately dressed, and everybody else was there to have a good time for the reunion. And the way in which I met him, if anyone had known my father, they would understand the introduction, because he was a very outspoken individual without needing to say anything that maybe might appear to others as being out of order. For example, I remember Joe Bates, my father always called him Cousin Joe. I since found out he was a cousin, but I don't think my father knew it at that time. But for this particular introduction, I was playing with some other children at Florida's playground, and my father hollered at me. He says, "Hey, son, why don't you come over here and meet a crooked politician?" And so he turned around, and my father said, "Sam, you don't want to put ideas like that in the boy's head." But that was my introduction to Fred Vinson. So today we have Mr. Henry Parter, and I owe him an apology because in the announcement I gave you, middle initial was G and it should be Q. So I want to correct that. He is a history buff. For the past 15 years, he has been studying the life of Judge Vinson. He's been a very faithful member to our meeting for the Big Sandy Valley Historical Society. I've run into him several times in the archives at the University of Kentucky in his study. He is a retired government employee, having been with our Defense Department. He is from Columbus, Ohio, and at this time I'd like to introduce Mr. Henry Parter.
I made another goof. He's famous Homer, not him. You know, I feel like President Donovan did at my graduation from the university when he forgot the speaker's name, who was a chancellor of the University of Mississippi, and he hemmed and he hauled and rallied by himself. I came up and whispered the name to him. So I'll never forget my graduation from the university. I think I'm going to read everything today here, so that and I don't call you James Cox. About 4 or 5 weeks ago, Ed Haslett called me and asked me if I would make a speech on Fred M. Vinson. I said, "Well, I'll call you back on that." And so my wife said, "You know what the answer is. You're going to have to go down there and make that speech." And so I called Ed back, and so you see me standing here. The material I put together is sort of a sketch. When you start talking about Fred M. Vinson, it's just merely trying to talk about the world to describe it. And if any of you don't believe this, after I give you just a little bit of information, you can sit down over here in the corner with me for the rest of the afternoon. I've got enough papers there to sort of demonstrate what I mean about this man. I'm going to give you a brief sketch of the Valley and Fred M. Vinson, and then I'm going to play to you the speech that Fred M. Vinson made on July the 11th, 1951, which was probably his last public appearance in the Valley. A gentleman, Mr. Whit, back here a few minutes ago, said that he had listened to a speech that he delivered to the Boyd County Bar Association the same day that he delivered his speech on July the 11th, 1951. Correct, Mr. Whit? Probably the first white man to explore the Big Sandy Valley was Gabriel Arthur, a young Virginian who crossed the mouth of the Big Sandy in 1764. The Shawnees captured Arthur at the mouth of the Scioto River, and later he was traded to the Cherokees at the headwaters of the Tennessee River. Arthur finally escaped and returned to Fort Henry on the tidewater of the James River. And really, throughout this period, there was very few white people coming into this valley, because throughout this period, the Shawnee and the Cherokee Indians used the Big Sandy Valley as a hunting ground and field base for raiding and scalping parties. Charles Vancouver established the first settlement at the forks of the Big Sandy River. This settlement was wiped out by the Indians in 1793. The first permanent settlers established Louisa in 1799. James Benson, the great-grandfather of Fred M. Benson, came through Pound Gap from the Carolinas. And I say from the Carolinas because some places I read that he came from South Carolina. Other places I read that he came from North Carolina. So if somebody, some authority here today can straighten me out on whether it's North or South Carolina, please do. And he settled on the Tug Fork of the Big Sandy River in 1800. That was 1 year after Louisa was established for as a permanent settler. On his way to Kentucky, he joined a party which included Benjamin Sperry family, who had traveled from the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. James Benson married Rhoda Sperry, who was the daughter of Benjamin. From this union, the House of Benson was established in the Big Sandy Valley. James Benson, a grandson of this early settler, and who was also the son of Lazarus, later known as Uncle Lace Benson, ventured into Ferguson country and married Virginia Ferguson of Wayne, West Virginia, in 1876. There was an all-day celebration at Virginia's home that was only exceeded in celebration by the chivalry that took place that night. Sweets and hard liquor were served to the guests who went their way in the wee hours of the morning. This was the first marriage between the two proud and powerful clans. James Benson visited Louisa to help celebrate the first train that the Chatteroy Railway Company ran from Ashland to Louisa in 1781. 4 years later, James Benson was elected to the first of four terms as jailer of Lawrence County. So it looks like we had quite a politician right here in the father of Fred M. Benson, the elected four straight terms as the jailer. The new jail for Lawrence County was completed in July 1889. 6 months later, on January the 22nd, 1890, the 13th Chief Justice of the United States was born in the jailer's quarters, which was attached to the jail. Thus, the early boyhood playground for Fred M. Benson was the Lawrence County Public Square. Young Fred romped in and out of the courthouse and listened to the arguments of lawyers. Occasionally, the judge would invite the small boy to sit beside his honor while a case was being tried. It is a little wonder that when adults asked him what he would be when he grew up, that his answer was, "Make a lawyer." Fred was educated in the Catlettsburg and Louisa school systems. He attended Kentucky Normal College for 2 years, 1908-1909. He entered the senior class at Center College, Danville, Kentucky, on the recommendation of Professor Walter Byington of Kentucky Normal College. After 1 year of study, he graduated and won the Orman Beattie Alumni Prize as a top-ranking member of the senior class. 2 years later, in 1911, he graduated from Center's Law School by maintaining a 98% average. He won the Bob Smerrill Prize for preparing the best brief on a case submitted to the faculty. In addition to his scholastic achievements, he was a star shortstop on the college baseball team, and he also found time to teach classes to the college in the college to meet expenses. Fred started practicing law in Louisa at the age of 21 in 1911. He was probably one of Kentucky's youngest attorneys. For a brief period, he was city attorney. In 1921, Fred was elected Commonwealth attorney for the 32nd Judicial District of Kentucky. Fred married Roberta Dixon, the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Robert Dixon, on January the 24th, 1923. And just a few months later, in 1924, he entered the Congress. And with the exception of one two-year term, 1929 to 1930, he served as a member of that body until May the 12th, 1938, when he resigned to become Associate Justice of the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. He also served as Chief Justice of the Emergency Court of Appeals. President Roosevelt appointed him to the post of Director of Economic Stabilization in 1943. In 1945, he was appointed Federal Loan Administrator, and soon thereafter was named War Mobilization and Reconversion Director. President Truman appointed him Secretary of the Treasury on July the 23rd, 1945. The public career of Fred M. Vinson reached its fountainhead on June the 24th, 1946, when he was sworn in as the 13th Chief Justice of the United States. The U.S. Senate, without any hearing, relative to his character or experience, unanimously approved the appointment. This exhibited the confidence that the people of this country had for this great Kentuckian. The reason I brought this up here, I went to Washington, D.C. a few years ago. I haven't spent all the time at the archives at Clayton. And I took what was called the Vinson Tour of Historic Points in Washington, D.C. And I'm looking at it here. Later, maybe some of you want to take a look at this. And maybe one of these days you'd like to take the Vinson Tour of Historic Points in Washington. These are all the different buildings that Fred M. Vinson served in while he was in Washington, D.C. for approximately 29 years. And I'll tell you, I really had my work cut out for me to visit each one of those buildings. I needed track shoes, I think, to go on this venture. My congressman, Chalmers Wiley of Columbus, Ohio, saw that the red carpet was rolled out for me in each one of these buildings. And for example, I was able to go right into the office, the private office of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States, and look at the very furniture that Fred M. Vinson used while he was Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. In fact, they took me through every room in the Supreme Court building, and I got even more of a royal treatment there probably than any other place on my visit into Washington. But Chalmers Wiley, none of you can vote for Chalmers, but Chalmers really saw that the red carpet was rolled out for Homer Potter that day. The public career of Fred, had 12 years of outstanding service in the Congress. While he was a member of the House and Ways Means Committee, 7 revenue acts were passed by the Congress, and each one of these acts reflected his handiwork. Many of the major features of our modern revenue system stem from his work. It is little wonder that many of our national leaders consider him as our greatest authority on taxation. His fabulous aptitude with figures, ability to take the complex and make it understandable, talent to conciliate differing viewpoints combined to make him a key congressional leader on such important measures as the Vinson-Guffey Coal Act, the Social Security Act of 1935. In fact, he made the major speech before the House of Representatives in introducing the Social Security Act of 1935. In Ashland, Kentucky, in the summer of 1934, he spent more of his time working on the financial structure of the Social Security Act of 1935 than he did in campaigning. Of course, he didn't have to campaign much. The Fair Standards Act
y'all saw what played a major role in the National Labor Relations Act and the reciprocal trade legislation of that period. Fred could be described as being one of the architects of basic social and economic legislation of the 30s. One of Fred's most demanding jobs was the fighting of inflation during World War II. In 1943, President Roosevelt issued his Hold the Line order to prevent runaway prices and wages. That sounds like today. Somebody better be not only issuing an order, but they better be holding the line, hadn't they? Fred was appointed as Director of Economic Stabilization to administer this program. Due in most part to his efforts, the cost of living rose less than 1.5% from May 1943 to March 1945. The late Chief Justice Vinson was so occupied in serving his country that he accumulated little worldly goods, but he accomplished that which cannot be bought with money. He was the heart that made devotion to duty a sacred trust. After Judge Vinson passed away, Mrs. Vinson, whose love, understanding, graciousness, and devotion had sustained him in his work, wrote as follows to a friend on his dedication to public service. And here I quote from Mrs. Vinson. "It bespeaks the many hours of labor Fred must have spent learning each new job from the ground up. We believe these tasks shortened Fred's life, but we cannot regret, we cannot begrudge these sacrifices he made for our beloved country." His was a life well spent. That really concludes the basic part of my speech. But I want to give you a few quotes here, and one of them is from Fred in the House of Representatives. "And many generations of Kentuckians, of this current generation of Kentuckians, has not been exposed to this speech that was delivered by Fred in his first year in the U.S. Congress. This speech was delivered on the floor of the House when he became riled because of an attack made against him and the people of Kentucky by another congressman. It was a little flower for Rollo LaGuardia, who later became mayor of New York." And here are some of the excerpts from that speech in sort of educating the LaGuardia. Listen to me. LaGuardia wouldn't love me for this. The little flower would say, "Get his name right." And he starts out here with a quote like this. "From the remarks of the gentleman, it is evident that he does not know of Kentucky. He has yet to learn, with all his scholarly attainments, that when the radiant sun rears its majestic head above the waters of the Big Sandy and the mighty Ohio River on its eastern shores, throughout the day it retains a most happy status in its journey across Kentucky. And when its golden glow in the Eden time sinks into the turbulent waters of the Mississippi, it leaves Kentucky with a feeling of gloom and sadness exhibited in its very face. Can it be that the learned gentleman never heard in the world-famous song that the sun shines bright in my old Kentucky home?" And he goes on and on, and he says, "I love Kentucky. All her sons and daughters love Kentucky. But a Kentuckian can know the thrill that creeps up the spine of one to the manor born when he's away from his borders. The strains of my old Kentucky home are wafted to his ears. It is the same feeling of pride that one obtains when when the American soldier stands at retreat in the glow of the setting sun, with all its nature subdued, and listens to the band playing to the colors. In either instance, this emotion is evoked because of love of country." And he finishes up his speech that day with a poem. "When you see a field where grass is blue, and everything looks good to you, you're in Kentucky sure as you're born. When a million sunbeams light your way, say, come on, stranger, won't you stay?" you're in Kentucky, sure as you're born. When the shadows creep, you can go to sleep. On a carpet of moonbeams, you can dream your dreams. Neath a blanket of gleaming stars, if you wake at dawn, mid glistening dew, and find old Dixie kissing you, you're Kentucky, sure as you're born. So that finished up his speech on telling the little flower about his love for Kentucky. On July the 11th, 1951, the Businessmen's Association of Louisa, Kentucky, invited Fred M. Vinson back for Fred M. Vinson Day. Little did they realize that on September the 8th, 1953, just a few years, just a year and a half or so later, that Fred Vinson would be dead. Many people who attended that celebration are still thrilled and talking about it, because you had people from all parts of this country, you know, Huntington, Charleston, Ashland, Paintsville. You had so many of the officials out of Frankfort, Kentucky, and of course you had two associate justices, Supreme Court there, including Stanley Reed, who made a speech that day. And I would like for us to listen to the speech that Fred M. Vinson made that day, because I think from there you will find out more about this man than I could ever tell you. So I'm going to see if I've got my gear set up here right, and we'll listen to Fred M. Vinson.
Directly across from our speaking stand and our broadcast point. In the background, you may hear the drum roll of the Ashland High School Band out of the town of Carl Reed. Ladies and gentlemen, our national anthem. Distinguished and most impressive looking plaque and stone have been unveiled, and now we now turn the program back to Mr. Charles K. O'Connell, who has introduced the Honorable Fred M. Vinson, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chief Justice.
Of course, I'm grateful to receive reject membership in the American Legion. That's a very signal order, one which I would cherish, and I know my boys and their children will cherish. It was a great honor in my life when the American Legion gave me their Distinguished Service Medal. That time in 47, I think there had been 28 or 29 persons who had been the recipient of that honor. It was given to me, so they said, because of my adherence to the principles of the American Legion and the Americanism for which it stood. Of course, they had opportunity to examine my work when I was in Congress and elsewhere. And I appreciated their thinking that I measured up to the standards required to bestow that Distinguished Medal of Service. But it wasn't hard for me to follow the principles laid down by the American Legion. But to me, it was easy, in Congress or out, because essentially, it was what I was born with and reared with, a love of my country. For God and country, so says the American Legion. You know, it's very difficult for me to speak to you today in a normal manner. Ordinarily, man or woman who passes through and has achieved something, or their friends think they have achieved something, hear not the words of friendship and of praise.